coming in and realizing that I felt incredibly unqualified and they had made a terrible mistake and that people were going to find out that they made a terrible mistake. I was like, you know, I can BS an interview, but they're going to find out once I get here.
Hello, and welcome to Business Beyond Usual. My name is Marjace Miles, and today I'm joined with fellow BBU producer, Adam Fasher. Say hello, Adam.
Hey, everyone.
Adam and I wanted to come together today and talk about an issue that has been on the minds of a lot of our classmates this year, mental health.
That's right. There is a stronger awareness of and focus on mental health generally in our society right now. And we're all seeing that play out here in business school as well with all the pressures we're going through and so little time that we have. So we wanted to take today's episode as a chance to talk about our own experiences and chat with some amazing experts that we have for you later in the show.
So today we'll be joined by fellow MBA students to talk about the ways in which imposter syndrome and the general stress of B-School has manifested itself in our lives and how we dealt with it. And then we'll chat with neuropsychology fellow from Michigan Medicine and the representative from Michigan Counseling and Psychological Service Office to answer some of the questions we have and some of the questions submitted by our listeners.
Sounds amazing. Very excited for this. So let's start by introducing who we have around the table for this segment. Chris, Matt, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Chris Hohen. I'm a second-year graduate student here at Michigan, first-year MBA student.
Hi, I'm Madeline Karnemark. I'm also a second-year student in the herb degree program with Chris and also an MBA one.
Fantastic. All right, so we called you guys here today because we are tackling the big issue of mental health, specifically imposter syndrome. Could you guys just tell us a brief story, whether it be at Ross or before school, how that has affected you in your life, and what have you done to deal with it?
Yeah, I'll get started. So before arriving to Michigan, I was in the Peace Corps for 3.5 years, and pretty sure every piece of clothing I had had at least one, if not 100 holes in it. Mm-hmm. Literally threw out all of my clothes after I finished Peace Corps and then started graduate school immediately thereafter. And it's a little intimidating walking into the Ross building, especially the Winter Garden. You know, it's got these, 50-foot tall glass windows and a lot of people working like busy bees. And I remember the first thought I had was, I don't belong here. Like, this is so inconsistent with who I am as a person and the experiences I've had up to this point. And I remember fleeing over to our other school, the School for Environment and Sustainability, and just hiding there. You know, over time, you kind of grow into it a little bit. But I remember most of last year packing in my bag both a pair of flip-flops as well as, a pair of nice dress shoes. And I think that was kind of emblematic of, living this duplicitous life of being over at one school, trying to be one person to fit in, and then being over at another school, physically dressing in a different way to try to be another person to fit in. But I can talk more about that as we go on.
Awesome. Funny that you said that. My story also has to do with clothing, which is sort of how it all started. If anyone has ever met me, I'm not a very tall woman. And being pretty short in stature, feeling like you have a say in a room can be very, very difficult, and that you can bring importance to a room. And especially when people like to, in group meetings or even in office settings, make jokes about how are you old enough to drive, or are only this tall can ride this ride. So you don't always walk in with that kind of confidence. And I think one way that I always felt a way of showing a lot of confidence was wearing a lot of colors. And going to business school was something I never thought I would do. When people say non-traditional background, I got as pretty non-traditional as they come. I used to do research around pollinator decline, bees dying. So natural transition to business school, obviously. But I knew that it was something I wanted, and I didn't know who to reach out to. I didn't have a network. So my first foray into business school was actually going to a women's event in D.C. And on the note of clothing, I was wearing a brightly colored scarf that always made me feel a little bit bigger in a room than I usually do, and a dress with espadrille sandals, which, for anyone who doesn't know what those are, they're not very, professional sandals. particularly, but it was how I dressed. And I walked in and I saw a room of women, and they were all in gray skirts and black jackets with little tiny kitten heel shoes. And I instantly was like, I've made a terrible mistake. I can't be in this room. I'm not qualified to be in this room. And every insecurity came flooding in. So I started walking down the hallway and was going to walk away from business school, got scared off, wasn't good enough to be there. And Diana Economy actually ran into me in the hallway, and it was a multi-school event. It wasn't a Ross event. And she said, hi, I love your scarf. I really hope you're here for the business event. And I turned around and went, and that was the first of a series of events that led me to coming to business school and continuing to go. And so whenever and similar to Chris, I have issues sometimes walking into rooms and being like, I don't have a background in this. Most of the day, people are like, why are you such an intense note taker? It's because I'm usually Googling later what it even meant, what someone was talking about, because I didn't come from the business world. I have no idea what's going on 75% of the time, 95. Maybe in second year, we've gone to 75. But I always remember that the first interaction I had was an authentic one of who I am and what I was wearing. And that was the person that attracted, that Ross found attractive and wanted to meet. And I try to keep that in mind whenever I feel like I'm unqualified.
Can you maybe, you know, because there might be some, you know, perspectives listening in and people who haven't joined the business school as well. I mean, we all know who Diana Economy is. She's a celebrity, A-star celebrity.
She is a celebrity.
A-list celebrity. Yeah. So can you maybe, like, do a quick sentence on who she is and what she was doing there?
Diana Economy works in the admissions office, and she, I think, is anyone who has a sort of strange background or a quirky personality knows her, because she knows how to spot talent in people that maybe don't know how to spot it in themselves, is how I like to say it. If you ever meet her, she is usually in brightly colored blue and maize. I was so close to saying yellow. I would have gotten in trouble. blue and maize clothing. She is a Ross All-Star and the hugest advocate for the school, and also making sure that it's filled with intentional people who want to be here no matter what that purpose is for, and helping people find their own path. So if you're ever at a recruiting event, look for the woman in the maize and blue, because she will help you out.
I couldn't help but notice you're wearing all black today. Ross didn't corrupt you yet.
They did.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
They did. No, they didn't. I'm wearing a bright blue necklace, in fairness. I think that's part of the imposter syndrome, the everything. There are trade-offs that I think we make every day to decide how much we want to stand out in a room. And there are times where I remember that I'm this person and that no amount of situations can change that about me. But also, is it easier sometimes to not have to defend yourself by sticking out in a way that makes you have to justify that your opinion is valid? So I do own a lot of black and gray suits now. It's true.
I think that's a great transition into our first question, actually. So I'm going to ask this to both of you. You spoke briefly about how imposter syndrome has affected you. But I wanted to know, how has it affected you and how you acted at Ross, whether it be inside the classroom or outside the classroom? Chris, you can go ahead and start.
Yeah, great. So I signed up for a Ross class, even though I was in the other degree program at the start of last year, and promptly dropped that class after the first session. And that was in large part because I was like, this is way over my head here. That was a great decision. And the reason was because, you know, I found a space over at the other school where I was more comfortable in kind of making that transition to Ross. And I remember that was first semester. And then second semester, I did take a Ross class here, but in my core competency, and which was leadership development. It was in a smaller classroom, smaller class size, much more interactive compared to the core course, where it was kind of, you know, every seat was filled, you know, 80 people with their hands up the entire class period. I wasn't ready to fight that. And so I think it was really actually like that, those little growth moments that helped me get to, you know, where we are now, being, you know, MBA ones, but just more confident in who we are and where we belong in this social landscape, in this intellectual landscape at Ross. And so thriving in a classroom, in a class that was consistent or synergistic with my core competency, I think put me in a good position to feel more confident this year in unfamiliar settings or in topics that I maybe feel a little less confident in.
Yeah. I took sort of the opposite approach we are in a unique position that we sort of get to wade into Ross being dual degree students. Coming in and realizing that I felt incredibly unqualified and they had made a terrible mistake and that people were going to find out that they made a terrible mistake. I was like, you know, I can BS an interview, but they're going to find out once I get here. And I decided to sign up for everything. I wanted to be on all the leadership boards. I wanted to be in every club. I wanted to be, if I wanted no one to think she's not good enough to be here, and I needed a bunch of credentials in order to show that. And they were great. I appreciated the leadership ability that I was able to take on last year. I appreciated how often I was at Ross, but it was also something where, and actually Chris and I were just talking about this outside, and it was something where the power to say no, I think, is something that becomes really hard when you're dealing with imposter syndrome. And it can feel, sometimes I think thinking about it, you might feel, oh, if you feel like you're an imposter, you're not going to say yes to things because you don't think you're good enough for them. But I think the real power is knowing your worth and being able to say no to things when you're like, that's not necessarily right for me, or I don't need to be in that to feel validated. So my first year, I said yes to everything. And there was a little burnout, from that. So trying to take it easier in the second year.
I think that's great, because one of the listener questions that we received is about how it's a cycle. Imposter syndrome is a cycle. It builds on itself because you start to do things you don't naturally do to fit into the mold that, you know, people are thinking of or where you want to put yourself. So we're definitely going to ask some of the experts about that a little bit later.
Cool.
Okay, next question. You guys touched on it briefly in your answers now, but I want to build on it a bit more. How do you improve work-life balance and manage your time in a healthy, sustainable way, you know, going through, especially with you guys being dual degrees, I can only imagine. I mean, going through a single degree, MJ and I are struggling with the managing all of it. So, yeah, just share some of your experience and insights into that.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, your Ross life is a go-go life for sure.
That's like a go-go girl.
You know, for myself, I guess two things come to mind, two strategies. You know, the first is community. And obviously we have the benefit of a dual degree community, but just being a first year here at Ross, you know, your section community is really important, really powerful. Your special interest groups as well, I think, are really important. If you're into social impact, if you're into finance, a consulting club, whatever it may be. I think those are opportunities to really see people, you know, and to see that, wow, there's just, everyone has their own odyssey, their own story. They're coming into this place from a different point in life, from a different path. And, you know, we're all here being a student in something. And we all bring our own expertises to Ross as well. So I think, you know, just tying yourself into community for myself has really helped me feel more integrated into the greater Ross community and feel less like an imposter here. And then secondly, I use this, stole this from Google, but like their 20% time. And this has been really valuable for me. So, you know, at Google, they have, it's either 20% or 10% of the time for their employees for them to focus or work on whatever they'd like to work on, their free time, basically. That ultimately does add value to the company through innovations and creative ideas. For myself, I've said, hey, Chris, I'm going to give you 10% or 20% time. And that's time where, you know, I don't schedule anything or I purposely schedule only 80% of my week. And, you know, when opportunities come up or opportunities to connect with people come up, I can actually say yes to that without feeling, you know, the guilt or the pressure of having, you know, too much on my plate already. You know, as Madeline touched on, like, no is a powerful word. It's really hard, especially when you're struggling with imposter syndrome and you're trying to be everything to everyone just to fit in. I think for me, 20% time is like built-in no's, you know, that, you know, those no's give my yeses power because I can say yes to something, be fully present, feel fully committed to that. So that's been just one strategy that I've used that I think has helped me be part of the Ross community, but then also go outside my comfort zone and take advantage of experiences as they come up.
Awesome.
Yeah. My strategy is being friends with Chris Owen.
Honestly. I share that strategy.
Yeah. if you guys ever need a positive boost, talk to Chris. But actually that sort of is the strategy. I think something that we do get to talk to a lot about in the herb community, but also in other communities is finding more authentic relationships and forcing relationships to be authentic. I think it can be really hard going through the MBA orientation sort of as this 1.5 this year. It was weird because they make this huge claim about how Ross has this social experience and, like, lean on your friends and it's going to be amazing. And then there was this, like, asterisk at the end that was like, but also remember that you are your brand and it's a network. And it was like, how am I supposed to, wait, am I allowed to? Am I allowed to let my guard down in front of someone? Or do I need to think about them as a LinkedIn connection that I need one day? And what if they see that I'm not, what if I admit that this class is hard for me? Are they my friend or are they my colleague or are they my network? And I think it can feel really hard to navigate. And so I always try, it both gives me benefit and I think, I hope it gives other people benefit. When I meet people, I'm like, hey, I'm not here to judge you. And I'm also, I will recommend you to the world. I will write you a LinkedIn, whatever those things are. Whatever you need, I will help you with. But also, I want you to be able to be yourself. And if something's hard for you, I'm not going to hold it against you. And I want to get to know you on a very real level. And I want to be able to talk about those types of things. Because I think that's what so often you can feel like, how am I surrounded by a million people and have all these friends and have this, like, really Instagrammable, like, social experience and feel really alone. And so trying to break through that has been something, I think Chris, actually, at the beginning of the year, you said radically authentic relationships. And it definitely resonated with me because I think it's helpful. It helps me get through the day, and I hope it helps others.
Yeah, I'll actually just add to that briefly. So, you know, over the summer, I was kind of reflecting on this, you know, this the importance of authenticity or radical authenticity. And, you know, how a lot of interactions at Ross can tend towards being transactional, you know, and how we're kind of stuck in this script, you know, where it's like, you know, who you are is based on, like, what industry you came from and what career you're trying to pivot into and what companies you're recruiting for. And I felt like last year I got so tired of that by the end of the year. I was like, but there's so much more about me that's, like, really cool that I want to share with people. I know there's more about you that's really cool, too. And so I wrote up this document. I called it The Heist. And that's kudos to Macklemore. Thank you. The point of it was basically, how do we hijack conversations? How do we hijack this script that's, you know, just talks about who you are is based on where, what industry, professional life you came from and what companies you're recruiting for. And so we created a list of 10 DMQs, deep, meaningful questions. And these were questions that were meant to provide a new script, a rewritten script that, you know, when you kind of found yourself being stuck, you know, in these conversations, valid, you know, it's helpful to kind of give people a reference point. But you know, at a certain point, you can kind of interject and say, hey, tell me about what was your favorite family vacation when you were growing up? But, you know, and just like these little nudges that, you know, create a space, a conversational space where somebody can really be their authentic selves. And I felt like that was just as much my responsibility as the inquisitor, as somebody asking a question, as it was the person responding to kind of share, you know, honestly about themselves. So coming in this year, that's been something been trying out, and it's kind of hard to divert those conversations, to hijack those conversations, but you know, it's worth it. And so led to a lot of neat conversations, and more importantly, really authentic relationships.
Again, everyone be friends with Chris Owen.
Thank you both. Could you stick around? We're actually going to invite Ariana, our neuropsychology expert, to speak with you about the history and some of the most recent research on IS. Fantastic. Well, for today's first sponsor, we have a very special message from the Mind Matters Mental Health Initiative.
Right now, I'd like every one of you to briefly close your eyes and take 3 deep breaths with me. Now, let's focus on being aware of our breathing and getting comfortable with its sound. While you relax, hi, my name is Amar Srinivasan, and I lead a weekly guided meditation session called the Mind Matters Mental Health Initiative. We meet every Friday during the school year between 4 and 5 p.m. in the Ross Building. Our weekly class begins with a brief overview of the art, science, and structure behind meditation. We then go into a guided 15 to 20 minute meditation session, followed by a time of reflection and discussion. We welcome both beginning and experienced meditators. For more information, please feel free to contact me at contactmindmatters@umich.edu. At this point, we can open our eyes. I want to thank you all for coming, and I'll see you next Friday.
So, welcome back, everyone, and thank you to Mind Matters for their awesome sponsorship. Be sure to check them out. For our second segment, we're very excited to have Ariana here, who has a lot of experience in neuropsychology and specifically with imposter syndrome. So, Ariana, can you please introduce yourself and your field of study shortly and, you know, just describe IS to us from a professional standpoint, because we've all been talking about it from our personal perspective so far.
Sure, of course. Yes, my name is Ariana. I'm a first-year neuropsychology fellow at Michigan Medicine, and I primarily work with adults and older adults on an outpatient basis who experience various neuropsychological and neurological disorders. And so primarily I do neuropsychological testing, but I also do some therapy with individuals that present with various types of mental health problems, such as anxiety or depression, imposter syndrome. And then I also work in the Prechter Bipolar Research Department. So I work with individuals with bipolar disorder and various mood disorders on a longitudinal research project. We're trying to learn more about that population in order to help them. And yeah, I would say that I have a decent amount of experience with imposter syndrome. When I started my undergrad, I felt it. When I started my master's, I felt it. When I started my PhD, I felt it. And when I started my fellowship, it just kind of rises up each time. And for our listeners who are maybe less familiar or don't know that it has the term, imposter syndrome, which is also called imposter phenomenon, is when someone doubts his or her accomplishments. They believe that they're unqualified for a particular position or unqualified to be in a certain situation or circumstance. And they have a persistent internalized fear of being exposed as some sort of fraud. And inherent in imposter syndrome is this inability to internalize your success and the idea that you're hiding this giant secret of being a fraud and that soon everyone will find out.
I'm just laughing or having a reaction to hearing it out loud because it's something I think we all talk about sort of colloquially, and it feels very validating to hear how like the intensity of the words around it, because it can sometimes feel like, oh yeah, I mean, I guess I don't always feel good enough. And to have a medical professional sort of saying this is real, it can be extreme, can feel very validating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's a very real thing. There, people have designed scales to measure it to see just how high you're experiencing this, and there are even kind of journals and documents that were found from Albert Einstein, Maya Angelou, and essentially they're describing their own imposter syndrome. And that they struggled with it, even though we would consider them, you know, geniuses of their generations.
It's interesting because, you know, kind of thinking on this topic, it's this balance of being self-confident, but also having a growth mindset, right? And mm-hmm. and with that growth mindset is and built into that is humility and the recognition or acknowledgement that we're all always on the path, and we're always trying to grow and acquire, you know, new understandings. And so it's an interesting balance between those two things of asserting, yes, you know, I know this topic, but then also I can learn more about this topic.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So can you maybe go a bit into the history of IS, how it was discovered, how it's developed over the years, like research-wise, stuff like that?
Yeah, of course. So according to research, imposter syndrome has pretty much always existed. And in the 1970s, there were two doctors who were actually psychologists, Dr. Suzanne Imes and Dr. Pauline Rose Clance, who started being more open about their own experiences as females in the field. And they started to really question, you know, their accomplishments. Had they achieved their positions just by luck, or because they had successfully tricked all of those around them? And so they kind of questioned themselves, and then they started questioning later on their graduate students and some of their therapy patients. And one of them one day had a young woman come in, and she said, you know, I feel like I'm an imposter. And so in 1978, they coined the term imposter syndrome. And that then was sort of the catalyst for research in this area, which, to be honest, there's still a lot of room for growth in that area of research. For example, early studies showed that imposter syndrome only existed amongst females. And more current research has shown that it's actually experienced equally between males and females, and that no one is immune to it. And so it's important to sort of offer resources to everyone, and that it exists at any level. Doesn't matter your level of accomplishment or position.
I'm glad to hear it exists in men. Otherwise, I'd be impostering the imposter syndrome.
No, you're. I mean, you're not alone. I mean, no. I was researching about imposter syndrome leading up to this episode, and one of the definitions said that most people go through it at least once in their lives. And I was like, try more like every single day, like once in their life. That sounds amazing. Just like, just once in my life. But yeah, so
yeah, understood. So I was going to ask about the symptoms. So I think we talked about, you know, some of the causes behind it and the people it affects. Can you talk to, like, specific symptoms, how we can see it in ourselves or others?
Sure, yeah. So as far as the, quote, symptoms, so we usually see imposter syndrome in very high-achieving individuals. And they're usually more of these internal thoughts. Primarily, so we start to question our accomplishments, our abilities. We feel like a fraud. We start to incorrectly attribute all of our success to external factors. Oh, I was just in the right place at the right time. It was just a matter of luck. Or I'm a really great con artist and I'm just fooling everyone around me, and everyone else must just be so gullible. I'm a great actor. And so it's these thoughts that just start to build on each other and kind of snowball and become larger and larger. And before we know it, that becomes our default sort of internal or self-talk, and our sort of default questioning ourselves as opposed to giving ourselves a pat on the back for our accomplishments. And then you can see that start to affect your behavior. So you might start saying no to certain things. So for example, no, I don't want to be an author on that manuscript because my writing is just not going to be on par with the other authors. Or I'm going to overcommit myself to things because I'm not qualified to be here. So I need to say yes to every single thing that people ask me to do so I could try and maybe develop the skills that I need to be where I somehow got, because I definitely didn't get here based on my existing skills. And so you usually feel those sort of internal thoughts start to increase. And then at times you can also see it in your behavior or even in the behavior of your colleagues or peers. So you can see this, you can see imposter syndrome in everyone. And in preparation for this talk, I actually consulted with one of my own personal mentors. So I work with Dr. Henry Paulson, who most know as Hank. And Hank is an MD, PhD, so very highly educated, professor of neurology at Michigan. He's the director of Michigan's Alzheimer's Center and the co-director of Michigan's Protein Folding Disease Initiative. He's published prolifically and has received a ton of awards. And so to me, I'm thinking, okay, he definitely does not experience imposter syndrome. He's so accomplished. And when I asked him about it, he said, are you kidding? I still feel it every day. And so he gave me a quote that I could read. He thinks that it would benefit the listeners, and I'd agree, that even though he's achieved all of his accomplishments, that no matter where you are on the professional ladder, the thought, I'm not nearly the pro they think I am, never really escapes you. Early on in my career, it sometimes gave me some stress. Now it's still there, but it just reminds me to do the best I can and continue to try getting better at what I do. So even though I would consider him as someone who's at the peak of his, you know, professional career, he still experiences it. And he uses it to drive him to just do better each day.
That's interesting. That's actually leveraging those feelings as being sort of your internal auditor or motivator.
Exactly. Yeah. So in psychology, we would sort of consider that as a reframe. And that's something that you can do to help sort of counter the challenges to imposter syndrome is reframe your thinking. So instead of thinking that this is something, you know, that is going to bring me down, it's something I can't help or I can't do anything about, you can reframe it as a challenge. And you can think that you can really rise above it. You can also challenge your sort of black and white thinking and sort of reframe that, you know, you're either strong enough or you're not strong enough to be here. Maybe there's a middle ground. Very likely there's a middle ground. So I definitely know some things and I had the skills they wanted me to have to be here at Ross, for example. And I'm here to learn. I didn't come here knowing everything. They also didn't expect me to come here knowing everything. And so challenging that black and white and finding that middle sort of gray area and being comfortable with the fact that you actually do have a strong foundation that was seen by professionals who have much more experience than you, and that you also have room to grow.
Yeah. I'll maybe just add just a little bit to that. Maybe the application side rather than the academic side is just like knowing that here at Ross, since I think our audience's perspectives and current students in particular, is that there's no safer place to fail and to learn and grow and you know, try new things than here at graduate school. It's a community of learners. It's a place to ask questions and be vulnerable. And I think as much as you can use that student card to say, hey, I'm a student. I just like to learn a little bit more about this. It's just like I've used that on a number of occasions, just true to form. People are just so willing to share their expertise with you and there's no pressure on your part to be an expert in that space. So, you know, coming to graduate school, just come with that mentality. That's like you're a student here. Use that card. You don't have to be anyone other than yourself. Ask a lot of great questions and you're going to grow.
I would also add, I think there's one thing that really I like about that quote and just thinking about this is that it's a mental health problem that happens in really high achieving individuals. And mental health across the board, I think sometimes can get stigmatized as you have to look like there's a look of what you look like if you're a depressed person or if you're really social, then you couldn't have any mental health problems or if you're really accomplished, you couldn't. And just as a peer to people, thinking about the fact that we can put pressure on our peers in ways that, oh, you're amazing. You're just capable of doing it all. And sometimes just giving someone the gift of being like, how are you doing? Can I help? Like, is there something I could take off your shoulders? Like, I know that you're amazing, but you don't have to lift this all yourself. And I think sometimes within the Ross culture, we have, Chris and I were talking about this earlier, this tendency of all bragging to each other about how little sleep we get. And how we're all trying, like, no, I actually am the one who's working the hardest and recruiting. And when people take the time to say, I actually took the weekend off and I caught up on some sleep or I spent some quality time, they're like, oh, I never could even do that. Like, I just don't even have the time. And reminding each other and being checks on each other I definitely resonate a little bit more with the overcommitting side than the saying no and having people sort of as a peer say, I see you, you're a high achieving individual, but that doesn't mean you're not necessarily struggling.
I love that. I love that point, Madeline. And I'll add to it that it was our second week in statistics. And I mean, inside, I think we were all just kind of crying a little bit or a whole lot. I know how it was.
To those listening at home, it's called Hell Week.
Yeah, it gets pretty crazy. It gets pretty bad.
But also shout out to Muhammad because he's great.
Yeah, not Professor Spoltz in any way. It's just a lot of content in a short amount of time. And I know a lot of us were quietly, you know, pondering our escape plan, and there is none, by the way. So,
no escape.
And I remember, one of my classmates in our section just raised his hand and he said, you know, Professor, I just have no idea what you wrote on the board. Literally just that blunt. Didn't sugarcoat or anything. And he received a round of applause. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No joke, the entire class just like burst into applause and laughter because we were all feeling it. All of us high-performing individuals under this pressure and expectation to perform at a high capacity and not to be wrong and to know everything, it was just like a release valve. And I think it really set the tone for the rest of the quarter. And, to Madeline's point, I would just encourage others to, you know, praise humility and praise vulnerability just as much as we praise being high achieving.
That was a great story.
Thank you guys for taking the time to come and talk to us and for being so open about your experiences. I know I'm going through what you guys are experiencing every single day, and it's really meaningful and helpful to gain your insights and know that we're all in this together. So thanks again.
Thank you so much for having us. I think, you know, we've had been able, being here a year, to have a journey, and just being able to share whatever we've learned, whatever that is, with others has been really nice to share.
Agreed on all accounts.
Awesome. Also, a special thanks to Ariana for sharing all that amazing insight and history of IS and how it manifests in all of us. And you're going to stick with us for the last part, where we're going to also host Julie Kaplan from CAPS. And just before that, a quick message from CAPS. Counseling and Psychological Services offers free and confidential services to all University of Michigan students. This includes individual therapy, couples counseling, support groups, and workshops. To schedule an initial consultation, contact the main CAPS office or email Julie Kaplan, the embedded counselor at Ross, at caps-ross@umich.edu. Also, for urgent mental health issues, students can speak with the counselor on duty at the main CAPS office at 609 Tappan Street. When CAPS is closed, you can also call 734-764-8312 to speak with the after-hours counselor. Check our show notes of this episode for more on these resources. Welcome back. For the last part of this episode, we're very honored to be joined by Julie Kaplan, the Counseling and Psychological Services, or CAPS, counselor here at Ross. We wanted to leverage the time we have here with Julie and Ariana and use the final part of this episode to take questions from all of you out there.
Julie, can you maybe do a quick introduction about yourself and your background and why you chose to be a part of CAPS at Ross? And then we'll jump into the questions.
Sure. I'm so glad to be here with all of you. I'm a social worker, and this is my fourth year as the embedded CAPS counselor here at Ross. I have a background in working with survivors of sexual violence. I've done a lot of work with college students, and worked with military members, actually, as a civilian employee. I loved the idea of being an embedded counselor because it meant that I got a chance to really get to know the student body, the community, the unique demands of being a business student. And I think I like to say that being a social worker at a business school sounds like the beginning of a joke, but it is my job, and I really love it.
Thanks, Julie. I mean, it sounds like you had a lot of great experience, and we're very fortunate to have you here to be able to leverage in all of those. We have a lot of veterans in the MBA program, so that's a great resource to have. So thanks for that. We'll also be incorporating in the info of this episode details on how to reach you and other Wellness Center individuals. So without further ado, questions time. Let's get into it.
That's good.
So to kick things off, I have a question for both Ariana and Julie. It reads as follows. I have a close friend who is very IS heavy. That means self-doubt, procrastination, pessimism, and I can't get through and get them to help themselves or seek help. Any advice on how to approach them?
I would start with an I statement, which is stating the facts. This is how your behavior makes me feel. So I'm worried about you because you always seem so down on yourself. I'm worried that it's affecting our friendship, that it's affecting your performance, that it's affecting how other people see you. It's kind of saying how their behavior impacts you, but also couch it in a way that's, I'm concerned about you, or it's really hard for me to hear this because I know what a great person you are.
Yeah, I think I statements can be a very supportive approach to your friend and definitely a good way to start. I think one thing I would add to that is that when you're talking to your friend who may not be ready to kind of talk about the difficulties that they're going through or may not be comfortable talking about it, it can help to be honest about some of your own vulnerabilities, some of your own weaknesses, so that you're sort of laying a common ground for them. And it's possible that they won't feel as alone, or they won't feel that they're the only ones dealing with their particular challenges. And it might give them sort of the safe space that they might need to talk about it more.
Is there any red flags that you see to know if your friend is at that point of being ready to talk about it or not?
I think there aren't red flags, so to speak. I think one thing that can be difficult is when your friends feel like you're sort of pestering them or you're constantly checking in with them. I think emphasizing that sort of safe and comfortable space and being available to them, and then being alert if they say, you know, hey, can we meet up for coffee, or are you around this weekend? And acknowledging that that may have been difficult for them to kind of reach out. And so then taking the time to maybe clear your schedule or make sure that you have a one-on-one interaction with them might be very appreciated.
Thank you. That was a great question. The next one, it says, I read a study that suggests that everyone should have some sort of therapy. Some countries have embraced visiting a psychologist as an important part of self-development. This question is, I guess, towards both of you. Can you just speak to that? What do you feel about that statement?
Sure. So to my knowledge, there are no negative side effects of therapy. So I would feel comfortable in saying that, yes, most, if not everyone, could benefit from a little bit of therapy. And I think that one thing just sort of general therapy would do for everyone is that they could learn coping skills for difficult life situations. Throughout life, everyone is going to have hard times. And sometimes we have really great role models that are a few steps ahead of us in life that we can follow, and we can learn healthy coping mechanisms from them. And other times we're not that fortunate. And so while I wouldn't say everyone definitely needs therapy, I do think that most people could benefit from just having a little more tools in their toolbox, and they could learn those coping skills for when difficult things come up in life.
I think that everyone could use a social worker in their life, but I am biased about that. I think that therapy can be helpful for a lot of people for a lot of different reasons, but the bottom line is a large reason why therapy is helpful is because it is a time in our schedule where we know that we can speak with someone who will listen, who is empathetic, who is understanding, who is non-judgmental. And so if we have that in our life through our friends, through our family, partners, clergy, mentors, then maybe we don't need it in a therapist. But I think that's the biggest thing, is just having people in your life that are there for you.
Do you have any advice on how to know when you need to get therapy, whether informal or formal, about yourself?
I think reaching out for help, especially to a total stranger, can be really hard. And anytime that what's going on in your life is getting in the way of being able to get done what you need to get done to achieve your goals, I think that's a really big red flag. And even if you have great supportive people in your life, sometimes we need a little extra. As Ariana was saying, sometimes we need some more tools in our toolbox. We just need somebody with the outside perspective, with additional suggestions and strategies. So I think kind of looking at how you're doing, and if it just doesn't feel like you're kind of getting what you need to achieve those goals, that would be a sign.
Next question is for both of you. How do you differentiate between recognizing your own achievements to yourself and those around you and just showing off? Any advice for making that distinction in real time?
I believe this is how not to be a Ross Hole question.
So yeah, that that term is new to me.
For us as well.
Yeah. But interesting. I think that it can be difficult, and in the moment, you're probably not always going to, you know, make the right decision, and maybe it will come across as you sort of bragging or, you know, inflating your accomplishments. But I think that it's more about your sort of external responses as opposed to what's happening internally, you know. So kind of just checking in with your friends or your family or your peers and who you're hanging out with, and saying, you know, I hope this doesn't come across as bragging. I worked really hard on this project, and I prepared a lot, and I did really well, and I wanted to tell you guys about it. And making sure that it's very genuine, and then kind of checking in with your friends, you know, and saying, hey, am I bragging too much? Oh, should I not tell that story for the 17th time? You know, okay, we all know the story, you know, so just sort of being aware of the cues that you're getting from your social environment, and also being okay and comfortable with the fact that it's okay to talk about your accomplishments and when you're proud of your achievements.
I think just the fact that you're having that question, wondering that, is probably a sign that you're okay. The reality is we all have strengths. We all have skills and capabilities. I love working with our business school students because you all have done great things. That's why you're here. And there's nothing wrong with sharing that perspective, that expertise. It's what makes Ross such a special place with so much diversity of experience, perspective, life experience. And I think as long as we balance that with being just honest and genuine about both our successes, our strengths, and our failures, because we all have both, I think as long as we're able to just be genuine with each other, this can continue to be a really supportive community in which we can celebrate strengths and support each other through challenges.
I think that in my experience at Ross, at least, it's very open. People are allowed to talk about this. And when you feel like you're part of a team, bragging and putting this in quotes, it feels a little bit easier, more natural. And then same with accepting your failures. It feels a little bit more natural to do that. So I think it's a healthy environment. The next question I had, this one's for you, Julie. What resources does Ross or the university as a whole have to help students that may be experiencing mental health struggles, IS or otherwise?
We are really lucky to be at a very well-resourced school within a well-resourced university. So CAPS, again, Counseling and Psychological Services, is an option for all of our students, and it is a free service. The University Health Services, UHS, also offers psychiatric services, and Wolverine Wellness at UHS does wellness coaching. We have a great partnership with Michigan Medicine, the hospital, as well as the Depression Center and psychiatry. Ann Arbor as a community is full of therapists in private practice. Someone who moved here told me, I've never lived in a city outside of New York where people are so open at talking about their therapists than Ann Arbor. So there are great resources, including a lot of sliding scale and low-cost therapists in the community as well. And our case managers at CAPS can help connect people with, and I can help connect people with therapists in the community.
You spoke on how Ann Arbor is so open with therapy and stuff like that. What do you think it is about changing that stigma? Because, I mean, I think some people don't go to see a therapist, keep up with their mental health because of the stigma. What do you think Ann Arbor is doing right, or the University of Michigan is doing right, and what are some red flags you see that other areas may not be doing as well?
So I think there's still a cultural component, both within the U.S. as well as outside of the U.S. So that's still a factor for a lot of folks, the messages we get about who we should tell our problems to or whether we should at all. But I do think there's a generational shift in terms of being open and about our struggles and feeling comfortable getting help for it. I'm always kind of shocked at the students who are happy to say hi to me in the winter garden or give me hugs. And I'm like, are you sure you want people to know that you know me? But I think it's wonderful that people are so comfortable. And the fact that they're so open about talking about it, is a positive peer pressure.
Was that a compliment for millennials right there?
Not used to those.
And we don't get that much. Very cool. Thank you.
I can add just sort of one thing to that. The university also, I think, is very thoughtful in the resources that they bring to campus. So recently, the Depression Center brought Dr. Kay Redfield Jamison to talk, and she's a very well-known doctor at Johns Hopkins University who is very open about her personal struggle with mental health problems. And so she came and gave a talk, and there were a lot of arranged sort of get-togethers for people to meet her and to talk about their own problems as well. And so I think the university is very thoughtful in the types of resources that they have here internally, but that they also focus on bringing good external resources to campus that will benefit students as it's related to mental health.
If I can brag for one more second, I think Ross is really good at this in particular. And I'll say that just because I'm here and so I'm biased. But you know, the partners that I work with, the advisors, the career development coaches, faculty, they really care and are invested in wellness, not just the Center for Positive Organizations, but throughout the school. And I think I've heard speakers who have come to talk about things related to business and work in conversations about well-being and supporting their employees' mental health. So it's really spreading, and I think Ross is doing, both our students and our staff and faculty are doing a great job of supporting that.
You mentioned different cultures in that term. Are there any particular challenges you've come across in, you know, reaching out and connecting with so many different cultures converging here at Ross and Ann Arbor?
I am amazed at our international students. I think the fact that you spend your day communicating in a language that is not the one you grew up speaking is amazing. And the fact that some of our students come to speak to a therapist and talk about their feelings in a second, third, fourth language is extraordinary. It's not something I could do. Again, I think the fact that Ross does a great job of advertising resources and trying to facilitate those relationships forming with among our students, I think it helps. And hearing someone else talk about, oh, I saw that awesome CAPS counselor named Julie, or, you know, whatever they say, I think that again, with the destigmatizing, that really helps and it spreads to all our students.
So this next question, and this will be open to both of you. It reads, the most challenging part, in my opinion, of IS is that it can cause a cycle. You initially feel like you do not belong because you don't speak a certain way, you don't look a certain way, you don't think a certain way. And so you don't consider your unique and special qualities good enough to be in the position that you're in. Therefore, you try to change or become more like what you think you should act or think like. And that makes you worse and makes you start struggling, and it builds and compounds on itself. Do you have any thoughts on, I guess, how to change that cycle, or what's your initial reaction to that statement?
I think it's very easy to get caught up in those cycles that are happening, I would say, mainly, you know, internally, but they are also affecting your behaviors. And it sort of starts to snowball and just build and to become a bigger problem. And I think at those times, it's very important to reach out. So whether that's reaching out to a mental health professional or to a trusted peer or colleague, I think that in order to break those cycles, it's helpful to introduce some new factor that's going to help guide you through that process. And most people, just by default, don't have the sort of cognitive skills and emotional skills that they need in order to break that cycle. And so I think when it sort of gets to that point, and you find yourself sort of trapped in a cycle, that's when it's important to reach out and to get professional guidance that's going to help you to change your behavior, change your thought patterns, and to really break that cycle, and to help give you skills for when you feel like you're approaching entering that cycle again in the future if it comes up.
It's also helpful to understand what's behind these feelings of imposter syndrome and recognize that, again, they're very normal. We all go through them. They're not something that's going to disappear once you leave school. They unfortunately can follow us throughout. You know, CEOs can have, and chairman of the board can have imposter syndrome. And so it's just a sign that we're feeling nervous and feeling like we have a lot to learn. But if we can reframe that as a wonderful challenge, how great is it that we have more to learn, that we can are in a new situation where we're out of our comfort zone, because that's an opportunity for growth, also for risk and failure, but growth comes out of that too. And when we're able to share that with supportive people and realize we're not alone in that, and also it gives us a chance to highlight our strengths, our opportunities, I think it doesn't have to be a bad thing.
So this next question is for both of you. For all of us studying at Ross and for prospective listening at home, we're going through, you know, applications and while having full-time jobs and probably having a very hectic time. What advice can you give to us as to how to manage professional goals together with wellness and mental health and make sure that they're well-balanced?
I tell students, and especially our MBAs, you all are so busy, and the prospectives who are, as you said, juggling a full-time job and the full-time job of applying and hopefully having a life outside of that.
Hopefully,
all of you, right, is obviously prioritizing is important and coming up with a couple non-negotiables, not too many, but a few. What are a few things you know you need in your day, in your week, that help you feel relatively balanced? So that could be 20 minutes of staring at the walls. It could be exercise. It could be prayer. It could be music. It could be a creative outlet. Kind of whatever it is, make sure that you have a couple non-negotiables. And I tell that to MBAs all the time. Like, you have so many meetings, and often you feel like, well, this is when I was supposed to go exercise, but it's the only time my group can meet. No, that's a non-negotiable. If you don't do that, you are not going to be able to function and do your best throughout the week. So it is important for us to prioritize our well-being.
My wife says she's a non-negotiable.
As she should
our
be.
Weekly.
Correct.
Good for her.
So I definitely second that. I think it's very important to have those non-negotiables to help you keep that balance. And personally, I treat those times as appointments. So if I, you know, have appointments with other people, I have an appointment with myself at the gym, and that goes on my calendar, and I don't move that for someone else. And so really holding yourself to those non-negotiables, I think, is important. And the thing that I would add is when you're going through the process of maybe applying to, you know, if you're applying to Ross or if you're already here, I think it's important that you don't let this one part of what you're doing define you. So if you have, you know, a bad day in class or you have a meeting that goes poorly and you go home, that's not the be all end all. That one assignment doesn't define you, and that you have other things like a wife or, you know, or your dog or your softball team or your bar trivia team, just other areas of your life that are part of your identity, so that if one part of you isn't doing so great that day, it doesn't mean everything. It's not 100% of who you are.
Thank you. That hits home. Yeah.
This next question, I think, is a fantastic question. We kind of touched on a little bit what cultural differences, but the next question reads, does demographics factors play a part in IS or mental health as a whole?
Yes.
Yes. demographics play a factor, but I will say that regarding mental health, just broadly speaking, but also specifically with imposter syndrome, no one is immune. So it doesn't matter your socioeconomic status. It doesn't matter your sexual orientation. If you're 5 foot tall, if you're, you know, 7 feet tall, you're not immune to these challenges. And so I think that's one thing that's important to remember, especially if you're feeling alone or that you're particularly challenged. You're definitely not. And everyone, regardless of your level of accomplishment or achievement or position within a program or a company, that you're not immune to these challenges.
I completely agree. No one is immune to this. We tend to hear more about imposter syndrome from women and underrepresented minorities, but that doesn't mean that it's exclusive. And the same with just seeking therapy. It tends to be a more comfortable thing for women to do than men. But I think that's changing as well.
Have you seen any difference in approaches between the sexes to feedback regarding IS? I mean, do men and women react differently to imposter syndrome related situations?
I think that's a great question that remains to be answered. I think that there are a lot of gaps in the research on imposter syndrome. So, and maybe you can speak to this, but I'm not aware of any studies so far that have looked at sort of gender differences in how they would respond to therapy, for example, or, you know, different evidence-based approaches.
So our last question, how can you help others manage or solve anxiety or emotional distress? How do you know when you're helping or when you're butting in?
I think our MBAs are particularly good at wearing masks and having this false front where it looks like, you said I could curse, so I'm going to curse, where they look like they have their shit together, right? And then you think, I'm the only one who doesn't have my shit together and everyone else does. But the reality is if you look closely, you'll see there are cracks in all the facades and that we're all struggling in different ways and we have our good days and our bad days. So I think a huge way to help is just to be genuine, to again share the challenges as well as the successes, to share those struggles and give others opportunities to support you and be able to support others in return. We spoke about this before. I think we all need supportive people in our lives. And it's great to leave the door open. Also to respect if someone says, I don't really want to talk about that right now. I just want to focus on something else. That's okay. But leave the door open, leave the windows cracked so there's always opportunity to come back to it. But I would much rather someone be annoyed with me than not reach out and wish I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those are great points. And I think really the only thing I would add is to not be afraid to make yourself vulnerable. I think that everyone goes through that fake it till you make it for a long time. And so when you find yourself in a position where you can kind of pay it forward by being vulnerable to someone else, so if you're a second year, you know, meeting up with some first years and saying, yeah, I faked it for like the first 6 months, you know, but just putting that vulnerability on the table for someone and also finding someone for yourself who's, you know, a few steps ahead of you professionally, who's willing to show their vulnerability to you so that you're sort of getting it on both ends, I think can be really difficult. And like you were saying, to just leave the door open so that someone knows that they can always come and talk to you.
I am by no means an expert on this, but a very wise person said to me, when you're talking to others, say it with your eyes. So when you're asking, you know, how is your day going, you say it 100 times. But if you say it and you genuinely look at them like, I'm curious, I really want to know how your day going, I want to support you, or how's recruiting going, you can say it in passing, or you can say it, hey, can I help you? So I think that would be advice that I've gotten in the past, and hopefully it helps one of the listeners out there as well. So. Well, I want to say thank you to you both for your time. I feel like this conversation was very helpful to me, and I'm sure it's helped many others out there listening. We will put contacts for both of you in our notes for this podcast. Do you have any final thoughts as we close this section?
Just thank you for having me. And again, please don't hesitate to reach out to me or any of my colleagues at CAPS.
Yeah, I second that. I think the university and Ross has great resources, and so reaching out can be really helpful. I think there are resources that are great to have, and maybe you never need them, but I think it's worse to need them and not have them. So becoming familiar with the resources that are here and taking advantage of them and being honest and open about that with your friends and your peers.
Fantastic. Well, that's all the time we have today. Thank you for listening. Thanks again to Ariana and Julie for joining me. Business Beyond Usual is brought to you by the Ross School of Business and the University of Michigan. Executive producers are myself, Marjay Smiles, Sheila Lal, and Christopher Anke. Our team of MBA producers include Leslie Chang, Dylan Corey, Jamel Curler, Adam Fasher,
Andres Fuentes Affleck,
Charlie Grant, and Jason Rock. Jonah Brockman did our recording and editing today. Thank you, Jonah. And thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Marjay Smiles, and this is Business Beyond Usual.